Good morning, good morning. This is Dave Mazza.
And I'm Joanne Bowman.
And you're listening to Voices from the Edge. Well, today is April 30th, the day before May 1st, which is a day of some significance to many folks. For example, it's Harpa and Sklerpa, the month of three milkings in Old Norse. But we're going to be talking about a different celebration of May 1st, namely the celebration of International Workers' Day, a commemoration of the struggle of workers starting initially in 1886 when over a dozen people were killed in the Haymarket, quote, riot, close quote, over a fight for the eight-hour day. And as everyone knows, the May 1st continues to be celebrated around the world, and right here in Portland, in fact, sometimes quite dramatically here in Portland, and it's going to be happening again this year. So we want to spend this morning talking about the relevance of May Day. What does it still mean? It's been 123 years. Is it relevant to the struggles that people in the 21st century are facing? And should we be looking forward, backwards? What does it mean? What does it mean to you? Have you been involved in a May Day protest, demonstration, celebration? And of course, we want you to join us in the conversation at 503-231-8187. And as part of this conversation, we have with us this morning an organizer from Portland Jobs with Justice, which is an organization partly responsible for the upcoming events tomorrow in Portland and Salem, Andrea Townsend. Thank you for joining us.
Well, thanks a lot for having me, Dave.
All right. Well, you know, let's just jump right in. It's been, what, 123 years? People have been celebrating May Day, saying it's sort of a special day to look at the struggle of working people. Is a 19th century celebration still relevant to people struggling in the 21st century?
Well, I think it's incredibly relevant because we still haven't solved a lot of the problems that people were fighting for in the 1800s. Back then, workers were fighting for the eight-hour working day. Today, we're fighting to have jobs, to be able to hang on to our houses, healthcare, and to make this economy actually work for us. And so I think May Day this year is going to be a chance for workers and working people to come together and talk about that and talk about what we can do to make an economy that is actually working instead of crumbling.
Mm. Well, for some of us of a certain age, we recall May Day being lots of people parading through Red Square and weapons being dragged along, and then increasingly an older and older crowd of old Soviets. Mm. And there's been suggestions that that's also part of the problem today, that yes, it may be relevant to a certain block of people, but that it doesn't resonate with many communities, many age groups. And I'm wondering, you know, in terms of your work as an organizer, are you seeing, you know, when you say, start talking about May Day, are certain groups of people just, their eyes glaze over, or?
Well, a lot of people that I've been talking to are really excited about it. And a lot of them are younger people, students, even high school students, a bunch of people who've been involved in the organizing, go to PSU and go to some of the local high schools. And that's my memory of May Day. Was my involvement started when I was in high school at Franklin High School. Mm-hmm. And that was in 2000. I remember the big May Day protest that happened after the WTO protests in 1999. So there were thousands of people in downtown Portland. And it was really, that was a particularly interesting protest in Portland's history. I think you were there, Dave. Do you remember?
Yes, I had the pleasure of the police chasing me through the park.
Yeah, down to the waterfront. Yeah.
That's the May Day protest that I remember, like walking downtown following this crowd of young people because the police were following them in riot gear down Northeast 15th Avenue across the Broadway Bridge to the Portland, to the park blocks.
Yeah, it was pretty amazing. But then I remember that we went up to Powell's where the Powell's workers had recently organized.
That's
right. ILWU was there having their international convention.
That's right. That's right.
And my understanding is that there was the ILWU told the police that they threatened them with shutting down the docks if they didn't
back off
of like what they were doing to the protesters.
Yeah, it turned out there had been an ILWU convention in town, and so there was something like 700 ILWU delegates who had marched up in a support action at Powell's, the police, after having routed the demonstrators from May Day down in the waterfront, then went and was going to shut down the Powell's action. And mm-hmm. basically were confronted with 700-plus dock workers saying, yeah, right, come on, do it. And at that point, Chief Croker decided that discretion was the better part of valor and backed off from it. But right. yeah.
And so I think on that note, normally May Day ends up being a combination of a lot of different rallies that ultimately come together for a common purpose. Mm-hmm. And so at least that's been the history here in Portland. I know worldwide is probably a bit different, but has that been your experience as well?
That has been my experience, and that's the goal of this year's May Day March. Mm-hmm. It's a march and rally for immigrant and workers' rights with the headline of economic justice for all, for mm-hmm. everyone. So we're really trying to bring together a lot of different people and different communities to talk about what economic justice means and how we're all being affected by this economic crisis and what we can do about it. So I think it'll be interesting to see who turns out. We've been outreaching to a lot of different communities. So immigrant communities, the VOS, the Workers' Rights Education Project, mm-hmm. has been working with day laborers. We've been reaching out to the labor community. So a bunch of different labor unions have signed on and are going to bring people. And I mentioned students before. Mm-hmm. There's also going to be an unemployed homeless contingent in the march. And then the anarchists will be there. So it'll be, interesting. And we have a whole set of demands that we are talking about, which I could tell you about.
So let's talk a little bit about economic justice. I mean, that term gets thrown around a lot. What does an economically just community look like? I mean, because, you know, right now we've got hundreds of millions of dollars in economic stimulus dollars floating in, but it doesn't appear to be accessible or available to regular people or unemployed people. We don't appear to have a Oregon plan about how we're going to really put Oregonians back to work, and I mean Oregonians across the board. And so when we talk economic justice, what is Jobs with Justice definition? What does economic justice look like?
I think economic justice means people having good jobs that pay a living wage, mm-hmm. that give them access to health care, the ability to have a home, communities where people have access to public transportation, they have access to the things that make a community healthy, to good schools. And what you said about the economic stimulus dollars mm-hmm. not really being accessible, I think is like a huge problem right now. We have this money, it's being put out there for our communities, but how do we get it and how do we distribute it equitably? Yes. And so I think we really have to figure that out and make the demands on our elected representatives to make that money available and to put it to good use in our communities.
Well, if you're just tuning in, you're 10 minutes late and should have been listening to the beginning of the show. However, we are talking this morning with Andrea Townsend of Portland Jobs with Justice. We're talking about the May Day event, not only what's happening tomorrow in Portland and in Salem, but looking at the bigger picture of May Day. How is it relevant? Is it still relevant? And if you've been involved in May Day protests in the past, or if May Day has particular meaning to you, give us a call at 503-231-8187. One of the things that I think is interesting that I've noticed, at least here in Portland, in watching the May Days over the years, too many of them, actually, but is the fact that in recent years there has been much more of a diversification of participation in May Day. I mean, quite frankly, you know, when May Day started getting revolved back in the late 90s here, it was largely kind of a set of primarily white and from a particular segment, and it has certainly seemed in recent years become more diverse. And do you see that as either much more successful organizing by the organizers of May Day, or what's happening that we're seeing now much more of a presence of people of color involved in this, and you know, why is this happening?
Well, in 2006, that was one of the biggest, well, it was the biggest May Day that's ever happened in Portland. I think it's one of the biggest protests that's ever happened in Portland. The numbers are between 20 and 40,000. Mostly immigrant and Latino people came out and protested in downtown Portland and just filled the park blocks. I wasn't there, actually, so I didn't get to participate in that one. But my understanding was that that was a reaction to some particularly anti-immigrant legislation that was coming down from the federal level. And there was basically a general strike in the Latino community across the country. And I'm not sure exactly how that happened. I think that it had a lot to do with just people's anger about the situation and feeling really targeted by this this legislation. But I'm sure it had a lot to do with really successful organizing, too. Hard to get that many
in your unbiased opinion as an organizer.
I mean, 20,000 people is a lot of people.
So, right. Yeah. But you're right. I mean, that was actually organized as a one-day strike. People actually worked with their employers to say, we need to take this day off. And they negotiated another day that they would go to work so that they would make up the hours. Employers were very supportive of the march because they knew how significant it was to a certain segment of the community. But when I hear the term immigrant, I think broader than just the Hispanic community, because we've got immigrants from all over the world. And so I think sometimes we get very narrow in our focus. We say immigrant and we mean Latino. Mm-hmm. But when you say immigrants, this is going to be an immigrant march. I'm hopeful that what we're talking about is a much broader representation of immigrants from all over the world.
Yeah.
Well, we are going to go to the phone lines because Richard is waving at me, meaning we have a caller or he's just friendly. And if you want to join us in the conversation, give us a call at 503-231-8187. We're speaking this morning with Andrea Townsend, Portland Jobs with Justice organizer. We're talking about the relevance of May Day. So we have Julie on the line. Good morning, Julie.
Good morning. And Richard, yes, is very friendly.
But that's another show.
I'm calling because when I was growing up, May Day had a different meaning. You would make little bouquets of flowers, and you would put them on the porches of your friends and neighbors and ring the doorbell and run away. And they would open the door, and there would be this beautiful spring bouquet waiting for them. And they would figure out who did it, but it was really fun. And we would bring special flowers for our teacher. And then when we were in our elementary school, went from kindergarten to sixth grade. And when you got to be in sixth grade, you got to dance around the maypole. And you did lots and lots of rehearsing so that you could wind it and unwind it all while you were dancing. And then you did it, and all the parents came, and everybody was dressed in springtime, beautiful clothes. And we had these beautiful different pastel-colored ribbons. And the music started, and we danced around the maypole. And it was just fun. And when I think of May Day, I have been in actually in Europe and things, and in May Day marching parades that honor the labor force. But that's some of my earliest memories, and it's so nice as I went through elementary school hoping to be someday in sixth grade so that I could dance around the maypole. It was just fun.
Well,
so it was really a celebration of spring.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, I think so.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Julie. And, well, there is, you know, I guess we should say there is a celebratory aspect to what's going on May 1st.
Yeah, we want to have a really good time. We're thinking of it as a celebration of workers' struggles and placing demands on power, but in a creative, like, exciting way. So there's going to be, like, a ton of music. People are going to have big banners, and actually we're going to have some puppet theater that folks have been working on, these giant interactive puppets, and they're going to do some street theater. And there's actually, like, a lot of different musical groups that'll be participating in the march. So I think it'll be really fun, but we're definitely, it's very political.
And so what happens after May Day? So you bring thousands of people together, people have fun, they develop a list of demands? Are there some action steps that are going to happen after May Day to really hold the power structure accountable for the demands that are being asked?
Yeah, I think this is just one more step in highlighting our campaigns and hopefully mobilizing and inspiring people to continue working on these demands. And there are campaigns that have been people have been working on in the past and will continue. So one of the big demands is to stop the ICE raids and end the detentions. So these have been happening across the country, and they're going to continue. So we're going to need to keep the pressure on the federal government and the Customs and Immigration Enforcement Agency to stop targeting families and to stop detaining and deporting people who just have come here because they want to work and take care of their families. Another big issue that we're highlighting is the Employee Free Choice Act, which is a federal law that allows workers a fairer process to form unions and punishes corporations for firing or discriminating against people who are trying to organize and exercise their right to do that. And this is actually pending in Congress right now, and so we feel like this is a really good time to get the word out really broadly and mobilize more community support to say, we need this law and we need it to be passed now.
And I also know that in January there was a huge economic summit to just talk about the current economic situation for working people in Oregon. I know that there have been meetings that have continued since that event took place, excuse me, and there have been a desire to really organize some smaller economic summits, because over 800 people came to that one.
Yeah, to the town hall and the economic crisis. Yeah, there's an economic crisis and transformation committee that's actually working on doing some mini town halls in neighborhoods, and I think the next one's going to be in the Cully neighborhood, and they're working on organizing that right now. Mm-hmm. So that'll be another good place to go.
Yeah, I wanted to back up a little bit to the employee the union piece that's going on, and the name of the act has just slipped through my mind.
The Employee Free Choice Act.
Employees Free Choice Act, which has been an interesting campaign because we're certainly starting to see, we have been seeing for quite some time, the response to that with various ads being put out about taking away the secret ballot.
Right.
Which is, I think at first has actually been counterproductive because most people, I've known many people come up to me and say, what are they talking about?
Right.
Not realizing it's about union organization, union organizing. But where are we in that campaign, and what's kind of the key message coming? I mean, obviously you want the bill passed, but what are you going to be saying at May Day that's really wanting to push people on that? Are we looking at, you know, is Congress moving in that direction? Is Obama being sympathetic towards it? Do we think it's going to pass, or are we still in kind of a real uphill stage? Because this is something the unions have been trying to get for a long time.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I mean, well, you heard in the last couple of days that Arlen Specter just became a Democrat. He was the folks who's voted for the Employee Free Choice Act twice already and was a co-sponsor of it. And then switched and decided that he was going to vote against it. And now he's switched parties and become a Democrat, and people are thinking maybe he would be more willing to vote for the Employee Free Choice Act. But he actually said in his statement about his switching parties that he's still not going to support it. So he's kind of one of the key people, but there's also other folks in Congress that we can put pressure on. The problem is that they need 60 votes to close debate on this act, and it's passed the House twice. So the Senate is really where the battle is. And in Oregon, what we're trying to do is just hold our elected representatives in Oregon accountable. All of our congressional delegation, except for Greg Walden, have signed on as co-sponsors. And so we just want to make sure that they know that we appreciate their support and that they continue to support this bill in its current form and not accept any changes, because that's kind of where some of the discussions are going, that they might change the bill a little bit to make some of the people who are voting against it now more willing
make
to do
it
that.
More pliable for them. You know, I have a question, though. I'm not sure that I'm on board with the Employee Free Choice Act simply because unions have not been really good friends with communities of color. still, whether you're talking leadership or whether you're talking apprenticeship programs, it's still a struggle to get people of color into those union occupations. And we have a really poor record here in Oregon in making that happen. And so I just want to challenge that, the assumption that we just think that all of us think that this is a good idea. I'm very concerned about what I've seen happen over the years is that people of color have really been pushed out of those opportunities. And I've seen nothing in the Employee Free Choice Act that's really going to provide more opportunity for people of color, youth, and women to really take leadership within these organizations. And so I just want to make sure that there's not an assumption of that everybody's on board and think this is a really great thing for everybody.
Well, I totally hear that. I mean, my response is that I think that even though unions aren't perfect, having the ability to organize and collectively bargain greatly benefits communities of color in terms of wages and their access to health benefits.
Well, only if they can get in.
Right, only if they can get in. But the problem right now is that, like, it's so hard to organize a union in your workplace because corporations discriminate against people when they try to do that. And there's a billion-dollar industry bent on keeping people from even beginning the process of organizing. And people are just terrorized when they try to do that. So the Employee Free Choice Act addresses what those employers are doing to stop organizing. And I think that is incredibly important.
But I think the unions have to address the issue of being more accessible and open to more folks. And so the assumption is that everybody's just going to jump on board because this is a good, progressive piece of legislation. My dad was in a union longshoreman, for over 30 years. So I know the value of, living wages and being able to actually have access to that. But I also know the history that we have in Oregon, and I'm not talking nationally. I'm talking specifically in Oregon, that we have a long history of shutting people of color out. And I think there's been an unwillingness to acknowledge that and actually work proactively to make sure that we're doing all we can to bring people of color into the labor union. And instead, what I hear constantly is you need to support the union to do more to protect the union. But if you're shut on the outside, then that's not really a fight you want to take on unless you think you're going to benefit in some way from that.
Yeah, I mean, I see in my work, I've seen a big tension in the labor movement between labor unions that are very top down and authoritative and hierarchical and unions that are very democratic and where the actual membership of the union gets to make decisions about what their union is doing. Right. And so I think the labor movement is going to have to address that like very seriously if they're
going
to survive.
That's right.
But I think the labor movement has to survive because our community, like, we need to be able to organize or corporations are going to be able to do whatever they want to us. So I don't know. I see that like conversation being had. Mm-hmm. I think people need to be talking a lot more about it, and our unions need to be way more democratic than they are.
Right.
But we're not going to be able to do that if like people can't form unions. And that's the fight right now is like, can we organize? Do we have this right? Or are we not able to do that?
Yeah, and it should be noted that this is a tension that has existed since the beginning of the labor movement.
Right.
We've
That's
seen
right.
certainly, the trade unions, the more traditional guild-like organizations have been resistant for many years to this much more broader type of organizing and more inclusive. Mm-hmm. I mean, one of the things that the IWW was noted for was the idea that, we know organize everybody, and was quite successful and quite in the forefront of bringing people of color and other groups into unions that had traditionally not only been ignored by the established unions, but actively,
pushed out.
So it's an ongoing struggle. And I agree with you that, we need to constantly be holding their feet to the fire. Mm-hmm. But again, I think, as Andrea has said, for myself, I think that, without the unions, the possibility of bringing, you know, that sort of economic justice into the workplace just gets even worse and worse. But enough of what I think, because we have callers stacking up on the line. And if you want to join us in this conversation, give us a call at 503-231-8187. We're talking this morning with Andrea Townsend, an organizer with Portland Jobs with Justice, talking about specifically what's going on tomorrow, both in Portland and in Salem, but also more broadly about the relevance of May Day and what are the issues that we come to grapple with on May Day and whether it's relevant to you still. And if you want to weigh in on that, give us a call, 503-231-8187. Let's go to the phone lines where we have Michael on the line. Good morning, Michael.
Hi, is this me?
This is you.
Okay. I listen to your show all the time. I don't have a cell, so sometimes I really want to call in and can't. And if I may, I would like to tie in last week with this week. I think it's pertinent. When you were talking about corporate fee, and I was an employee for a long time. I was doing hardwood floors when they did union busting in the shops, and then a lot of things changed. The people weren't getting educated properly. A lot of inexperienced people were working on people's houses, and rates began to go down. Insurances. I finally just got fed up and just did something about it, and I started my own business. I don't have any employees. I am the business, and there's a lot of people like me, and we get lumped together. I mean, I have a problem with the evilness of huge corporations when they do evil things, and I do whatever I can to fight against that. But the problem is the public, I think, and a lot of the legislature is manipulated into believing that anybody who's corporation or business is one of them, one of these evil things, entities. And there's a lot of us that are just like people. Just when we form a business, we have to get a license, and it has to be through the state, and we have to pay a corporate fee. So the unfairness in the corporate fee is actually that a huge corporation with, you know, thousands of employees pays a $50 fee at the same as a single guy does, but the unfairness comes in when they start talking about raising the fee and not even discussing the fact that I would be considered a company or a corporation just as a person. And I think that little detail gets lost when people get and legislators get manipulated into discussing how evil it is that these people are just paying this minimal fee, and there's no discussion about, well, hey, we represent more than half of the people who are paying those fees.
You raise a really good point. You know, most of the businesses in Oregon, in fact, have 25 or less employees. And so you're right. A lot of times we talk about corporations and don't acknowledge that the bulk of the businesses that are created in Oregon are, you know, really small, very, very small 1-2-person operations.
If I may say, more than half of those, more than half, are just a single person like myself.
Right.
So I just thought I'd make that point.
No, I think you make a very good point, and I absolutely agree with you. Mm-hmm. And so we have to really learn how to talk about who we're really talking about, right?
Well, I think there's a huge push right now, much like when Kesey wrote Sometimes a Great Notion, and he was talking about people, independence being shoved out by these large concerns. The same thing's happening right now in a lot of fields in Oregon, especially in Portland, where small companies are being exclusively feed, you know, like the expenses are getting to the point where it's getting so exclusive that only the larger companies are able to afford to operate. Then they'll start hiring us for $6 an hour, people who already know what we're doing for 30
right.
years, you know. Mm-hmm. But anyway, it just seems like not just the corporate fee, but on many fronts, there's squeeze here, squeeze there, and it's just becoming to the point where the cost of operating a business is getting so exclusive that the independents are getting squeezed out. And a lot of us are the ones who do the loyal, faithful work because we're not mad at the boss. We are the boss.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Right.
Well,
right.
You know, and in addition to that, I mean, that's part of the conversation that's taking place in the legislature now around health care reform. because the people who say they represent your voice are the ones that truly represent big corporations in the state, right? But when, like my organization, when we go around and talk to small businesses, they're saying, we want the state to fix our health care system. We can't afford to wait for the federal government to fix it because it is such an enormous cost of doing business, especially when it increases 12 to 26% every year. You know, and so most small businesses, people like yourself, not only do they not have insurance, but they couldn't possibly provide insurance for their employees. And so we're accustomed to saying, well, these are bad, evil people because they're not providing health insurance for their employees until you actually have a conversation and find out, well, not only do the employees not have it, the employer doesn't have it either.
Yeah.
Right. Well, and conversely, too, with a lot of other ways, the small businesses get hurt in terms of the mindsets of the state and even the feds and local governments in terms of economic development. Yeah. It's rarely that you see strategies put forward to really support small businesses and to nurture and cultivate more of them. Instead, it's always, let's bring in the big corporate player who's going to save the day for us.
That's right.
You know,
then it gets lobbied in the legislature, and they manipulate things so that even if it is a good idea and they're thinking of the children, it turns into something at the very end when the news media is off and all the attention's off. It gets twisted into something that is just presses the thumb down on the very people that it was supposed to protect and save in the first place.
So, well, you make very good points. We really appreciate your call today.
Thanks. Thanks a lot for making the call this morning, and I hope we can...
I hope you can call us more often.
That's right.
All the time.
All right.
Have a good day.
Thank you.
Have a good day. Well, we're going to go back to the phone lines because we have more callers, and if you want to join us in this conversation with Andrea Townsend of Portland Jobs with Justice about May Day, its relevance, the issues that are being addressed and can need to be addressed, give us a call at 503-231-8187. Let's go back to the phone lines. We have Jane on the line. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I wanted to make a couple points. First, what inspired me to call in was when Joanne was talking about how people of color have been shut out of the marketplace and out of the unions and stuff. And I wanted to make a point of some history that I've been studying about the labor movement that FDR put in the National Recovery Act in 1933, and his agricultural policy ran blacks off their land in the Deep South. As a result of his agricultural policy, it literally ran them off the off their land, and they ended up migrating to the north. And the Davis-Bacon Act was actually used to price those unskilled farm labor out of getting entry-level construction jobs. So sometimes the labor movement has been used as a tool to hurt minorities. And you can get a lot of this information there on the Heritage Foundation. It is a conservative think tank, and they are really looking into the history of how the left has been, you know, the left during the progressive movement, a lot of those were white Christians who had bought into the science of eugenics, and their goal was to get blacks into ghettos, very similar to how the Nazis did to the Jews. And I know this is hard to believe. And this is hard to face, but it is a reality. This
okay, well, let me just jump in here for a minute because you've thrown out a lot of things, and there are elements of fact in there. However, I'm not in complete agreement with the way that the Heritage Foundation puts forward its facts. Now, fact, many of FDR's policies were indeed not making any effort to address the problems that African Americans and others we're experiencing in this country. However, I think that it is a misrepresentation of facts to suggest that those particular policies that you cited were the cause of the exodus of blacks from the South to northern cities. In fact, that migration had occurred well before FDR ever ran for office and was driven much more by a whole array of social and economic injustices in the South. And yes, when they arrived in places like Chicago, they experienced discrimination and what have you. But I think that the Heritage Foundation has an agenda as well of putting this out there to debunk the New Deal, something that we're seeing a lot of lately, revisionist history. A lot of problems with the New Deal, a lot of inequities in the New Deal, but it is certainly not the way it's being represented by the Heritage Foundation. So let's just kind of say, okay, they've presented their viewpoint, but empirically, I'm afraid the facts don't support what they're putting forward, nor what you've just put forward. I won't argue about the eugenics thing, I won't agree with you to the degree you're saying, but certainly eugenics was a problem throughout this country in the 20s and 30s. And in fact, that's where many of the National Socialist theories about eugenics were derived here in the United States, and it also was common in Europe as well. I mean, it was just a widespread thought.
And but, I would just add that blacks actually didn't own that land that they
were
leaving from the South. But I certainly appreciate you being willing to put your perspective out there. And like Dave, I've read information from the Heritage Foundation, and it is true that there's always a kernel of truth in some information, but it's always in how that information is interpreted.
And there's actually a number of good books that have recently come out, both from the right and the left, about the New Deal, which I think, if you're interested, you should be reading those, because you'll get a more balanced viewpoint and I think a much more factually correct viewpoint about the New Deal. So thanks for giving us a call on that, and go back and do some more homework. All right, well, let's go back to the phone lines because we have some more callers on the line. And again, we're talking with Andrea Townsend. And we were talking about May Day. We kind of got off on a little diversion there about the New Deal. But if you give us a call, let us know what you think about May Day, if it's relevant to you, if you've been involved in May Days in the past.
But I will say that one thing about the New Deal is that, you know, even though there was targeted support for people of color, it certainly depended on where those people of color lived, whether or not they benefited from the New Deal.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I will certainly say
certainly,
that.
Yeah. And, you know, actually,
so we could have a whole conversation.
We could talk about Eleanor Roosevelt's role in actually, you know, getting some civil rights on FDR's radar screen,
right.
Which I guess it's not an anachronism. They did have radar when FDR was around. But we digress. Let's go to the phone lines. Good morning, caller. You're on the air.
Hello, hello.
Good morning, caller. You are on the air. Richard's waving at me, but we don't hear voices. So, hello, Mark. You there?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, good. Okay, we got you.
Hi.
Hi.
So, I think that May Day is still extremely relevant and important. Unions are the only effective way to organize against sort of our corporate culture, and I say only as a exaggeration. Certainly there are other points that can be pushed, but they're the only sort of people that can sit across the table with any equal say in the law. And so the fact that unions suck sometimes is just because it's a people's organization, you know. I wish that every person was great, but every person isn't great. And the thing that a union allows is for the ability to organize, even inside of a union. It's important for people to understand that a union is an organizing institution. It's not a service institution. You don't pay money for dues to get services from the union. That's a way of thinking about the union that is portrayed and is most people think of a union like that. But really, the true power in a union is when people understand that they are the union, and that's how things change inside the union and inside the corporation. So, and this is a direct, you know, this is directly in response to, I think it's Joanne saying, certainly, and I've been organizing in people of color communities, and my mentors and colleagues are people of color, and it certainly is a problem in the unions, but the basic bottom line is that a union is only organizing vehicle to to struggle against a corporation with any effectiveness.
So, Mark, I take it you're involved with a union now?
I am not involved with a union now. I was involved with a union for 13 years in Detroit and moved out to Portland for something to do something else for a couple of years. I'm very impressed with how organized the labor movement is in Portland and Oregon, and my heart is still there. I'm doing other things that I think are complementary.
Okay, well, thank you for that perspective.
All right, thank you.
Well, let's go back to the phone lines. We have another caller waiting. Good morning, caller. You're on the air. Will.
Would that be me?
That would be you.
Okay, I just wanted to tell you that I'm sorry I'm not going to be able to make the May Day celebration tomorrow, and I'll tell you how I'm going to celebrate it. I'm going to Seattle and meet with my business partners, and we're going to form a what will be a multi-million-dollar corporation which employs about a dozen people in the area, and that's going to be my revolutionary act. And the other controversial thing that I'm going to say is we're not going to provide health care. Now let me let the other shoe fall. We're going to be a Teamster shop, and everyone, including me, one of the owners, is going to carry a Teamster's card. The only reason we're not going to provide initial health care is because we're going to take twice as much money as the insurance would cost and put it into advocacy groups for at least public option and eventually single-payer insurance, because I refuse to give a penny of money to the corrupt insurance industry.
So are these folks that are involved in your corporation, they're going to have access to health care through their union membership?
If I have to pay for it out of my own pocket. Now, that's one thing I'm in discussions with the Teamsters union. They have a kind of an employer health care package that works through a private insurance company. And I'm seeing legislation coming down the pike, which I'm crossing my fingers that Obama is true to his latest word, and he will, at least according to Dave Axelrod, that he will actually have a public Medicare for all buy-in option, and that's the way we want to go. I don't want to give a nickel to the insurance.
So are we being punked?
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry.
You're sorry, what?
I'm trying to understand who is punking you or potentially punking you.
Yeah. Well, we appreciate your call. So let me see if I understand your message. Your message is you're going to spend May Day in Seattle creating a new corporation. So it's not an Oregon corporation that you're creating, but you're going to all be members of the Teamsters Union, except that you're not going to provide health care for your employees because you're going to wait for the federal government to pay it for you?
I'm going to double the amount of money that I would have to pay on insurance to pay into advocacy groups to support a just health care system. I don't have a nickel for the greed-based private insurance.
Well, I mean, I think you and I are in absolute agreement about whether or not paying an insurance company to provide health care does anything to improve anybody's health. So I can agree with you on that.
Another way of putting it is I'm going to be self-insured.
Oh, okay.
My people are going to have their health bills paid if I have to pay them out of my own pocket.
Well, that's what I
okay. That was a piece of information
we
needed.
That was the piece that we were like. That's why I asked if we were being punked, because it sounded like you were saying two totally opposite things at the same time. Well,
no, I want to make it clear that I'm sick of the private health industry. I think healthcare is a universal right. I think that the arguments for public system over private system are overwhelming. You'd have to be an idiot to look at the
Speaking of idiots, have you called Senator Wyden and talked to him about your vision on health care?
I'm persona non grata with Senator Wyden.
He didn't talk to you anymore either.
But Senator Wyden, I've got a colorful way of putting it, but Senator Wyden.
Yeah, remember, we're PG here.
He's very comfortably in the pocket of the insurance industry. There's no question. His plan, the so-called Healthy Americans Act, SIC, is actually it's an insurance company. It is a Republican plan it is something that was designed to win in the Congress 4 years ago. He hasn't changed his mind because basically the insurance company hasn't changed the color of their coin.
Well, you know, I don't disagree with you, and I thank you very much. We appreciate you calling in, and we appreciate the clarification because we were all a bit confused. But thank you so much. Good luck on your corporation. Thank you for...
Have a good May Day celebration, everybody.
Thank you.
Good luck to you.
Have a great day.
And if you're just tuning in, you're listening to Voices from the Edge. Joanne and I are here this morning talking with Andrea Townsend, an organizer with Portland Jobs with Justice. And we're talking about the relevance of May Day. And if you want to join us in the conversation, give us a call at 503-231-8187. Let us know if you've been involved in past May Days, if you're going to the one that's coming up tomorrow, if you think it's still relevant. It's a 19th century event being commemorated in the 21st century. But before we go back to Andrea, I'm going to just spend a moment here to persuade you not to touch that dial or hit the power switch on your computer. Just keep listening to KBOO, because at 9, it's Press Watch, the news you're not supposed to know with Teresa Mitchell. At 9:30, Per Fagering speaks with writer and peak oil researcher Mike Rupert, whose latest book is A Presidential Energy Policy, which will be published on May Day. At 10, it's Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre and Liam Delta. At 10:15 on Flashpoints, producer Nora Barrows-Friedman presents a special interview on Israel and apartheid in occupied Palestine. At 11 on Between the Covers, host Jim Schumach speaks with acclaimed writer T.C. Boyle about his latest book, The Women, a novel about the wives and lovers of Frank Lloyd Wright. And at 11:30, Words and Pictures pays a visit to celebrated Portland animators Joanna Priestley and Joan Gratz. Also tune in for all-day May Day celebration tomorrow beginning at 8 with a special talk radio hosted by Joe Uris and featuring local group General Strike. All that and more coming up on KBOO. Well, Andrea, we've talked about a lot of issues. We talked in some length about the card check issue with unions. What other issues are going to be particularly highlighted tomorrow at the May Day event?
Well, one thing is we are tired of seeing these bailouts, so no more bailouts for giant banks would be a big one. We're calling for comprehensive immigration reform. Quality health care for all is another one. H.R. 676 is a bill that's pending. Well, it's not pending in Congress, but it has been proposed that would provide health insurance for everyone in this country get rid of this private health insurance racket that they have going on, which would address what that caller was just talking about. Another demand is housing is a human right, stop evictions and foreclosures. So the way that it's going to work is that we're going to have a rally with a bunch of different speakers and then a march through downtown Portland, and we're going to stop at several places on that march to highlight some of these issues and connect them to local struggles. So at City Hall, that's where we'll be talking about local issues like housing, like the sit-lie ordinance, the cuts to public transit that have been proposed recently. There's a new group in Portland called the Transit Riders Union, and they're going to be talking about TriMet's plan to cut 5 bus routes and service to 20 other lines. And then we're also going to be stopping at KeyBank, to talk about both the bailout money that's been provided to these banks and also the fact that KeyBank is supporting a company called Oak Harbor Freight Lines, where workers have been in a 2-year-long contract battle, and they're still trying to get a contract. And then we're also going to stop at the Federal Building, and at the Federal Building, we're going to talk about the Panama free trade agreements that are being proposed right now and will potentially be voted on pretty soon. And also the 287G agreements, which is federal law that allows local law enforcement to enforce immigration law. And there's a sheriff in Arizona and Maricopa County who's been using those laws to target Latinos and Hispanic immigrants. And he in racially profiling people. And then recently he had a group of people who were in jail who were undocumented. He marched them through the middle of town and put them in a tent city behind an electric fence. And that's his solution to the immigration problem. So there's a national call to oppose what he's doing and the laws that allow him to continue doing that. And that's where the puppet theater is going to be. So it'll be really interesting to connect all these issues and highlight the local struggles that are going on.
What we have callers.
Cool.
And so let's go back to the phone lines. Good morning, caller. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
Hey.
How you guys doing today?
Pretty good. How about you?
Getting by. You think we should change its name to Blood, Sweat, and Tears Day? Yeah. I got to tell you guys a pre-union true story, right?
Okay.
And when my grandfather worked at Ford's before the union, and if anybody broke, this is another Detroit story. And if anybody broke apart on the line, they would get fired for it. So they'd have to hide in their lunch boxes and stuff all their parts. And when they'd get on the bus, because nobody had transportation at that time, they would take all their parts and throw them out the windows. And all the young kids would stand out outside the windows and pick up all the parts because they could then go and scrap that for money for their families. And then the foreman would come over to my grandparents' house unannounced at any given time of day or night, and he'd always have to have his box of cigars there. He would have to have another empty box where he would walk down into the basement and take any of the canned goods that my grandmother used to can and my family used to can and pick out his peaches, his green beans, whatever the case may be, fill up his box, expect a meal at the table before he left, get his box of expensive cigars, and then leave.
Wow.
And if that was not allowed, he would be fired for that. I still have that old box to this day of one of the last boxes where my grandfather kept a note when he paid off his house. He kept it in that cigar box.
Oh, wow. Thank you for sharing that
great story.
Great story. That is a great
Thank
story.
You for...
People nowadays disregard unions, and they think that venture capitalists deserve everything they get. But if it wasn't for us, a combined people, all of us, that worked for all of them to put the money, to put their mansions in place, they wouldn't have diddly squat, would they?
No, they would not. And thank you so much for using diddly squat.
Yeah. Well, thank you for that story. We're going to have to move on because we're getting close to the end of the hour and we've got some other callers. But again, thanks for sharing
that. Thank you
that
so much.
And helping us put that in perspective.
Yes, have a great day.
Okay, we're going to go back to the phone lines. And good morning, caller. We're going to ask you to keep it short.
Right, thank you. I just have a question. I've been listening carefully and I... of course, agree and understand that blacks and other people of color are not represented in the unions and are often discriminated and left out. My question is regarding this act that's coming up, the free choice. Is it not true that if people are working, people of color, let's say, are working in a location, and the Free Choice Act were there, that would benefit them in that they could be able to form a union potentially without harassment and threat of being fired, or at least with less of that problem?
Yes, you're totally correct in that. And
okay.
I mean, I think, yeah.
Here's my take on it. I think that yes, it would provide more opportunity, but I think the key point then is what union the workers decide to affiliate with.
That's right.
Because
exactly.
That's huge.
You know,
yeah.
Yes.
And I think, you know, there's a lot going on in terms of the dynamics of the labor movement around that, and which, you know, as one of our earlier callers said, these are human institutions and
that's
they have
right.
these problems.
Right.
But yeah, I think a big point would be as to who they ended up being represented with, because we do know there are many unions out there that are Democratic, truly committed to having diverse representation, and there's others that don't have that tradition. So
yeah. That would be a key thing right there, right? Would be knowing what union you wanted to represent you.
Right, yeah. Right. Because
it's all about education, right?
And whether it's a union that's really committed to being a democratic institution, yeah, or it's an older, more business, business right model. So, well, thank you for that call. Hope
thank
we've
you
answered your question.
Appreciate that question.
And we're going to try to. Do we have one more caller, Richard? No, we don't. Well, we don't have to try to squeeze in one more. So, with the last few minutes, Andrea, what do people need to know in order to participate tomorrow? Is there contact information, websites, all the other multimedia
locations
things we need?
Yes.
Yes. Well, the location of the march is in the South Park blocks at Southwest Salmon and Park. We'll be getting started around 1 o'clock in the afternoon. We'll be making posters. There's like a musical program, spoken word poetry. A bunch of different groups are going to be there entertaining folks between 1 and 4. And then at 4 o'clock, we're going to have a rally I think we have 6 and maybe 8 speakers, I'm not sure, representing a lot of different movements, the labor movement, the immigrants' rights community, let's see, who else? Students, women, people of color. We have a pretty cool program for that, also including some music. And then at 5 o'clock, we're going to start our march through downtown Portland. And I think we're still negotiating the exact route, so I can't say where that is going to go, but it'll go through downtown Portland and end up back at the South Park blocks. So bring signs, bring your friends, bring musical instruments if you have them. Probably a good idea to bring water since we'll be walking for a little while. Come ready to get inspired and learn a little bit about what people are doing in Portland to change the world.
Sounds good. Well, Andrea, we really appreciate you coming by this morning,
yeah,
sharing with
so
us.
Much.
And also all the good work you're doing over there at Jobs with Justice, a great organization which has made a real difference not only in the labor movement in Portland, but in the whole progressive movement in this community. So keep up the good work.
Thanks for having me.
Great. Well, we're almost out of time, and we'll be coming back next week with, remember, folks, it's the Spring Pledge Drive. So we're going to have some special programming coming up over the next couple of weeks. We want you to make sure you tune in and, of course, support community radio. So if you want to catch up on some things you may have missed during the broadcast, of course, go to kbo.fm/voicesfromtheedge, where you'll get more information about tomorrow's event and May Day and, of course, the podcast. I'm Dave Mazza.
And I'm Joanne Bowman.
And you've been listening to Voices from the Edge. You have a good day now.
Bye.